China has called on the United States to view their bilateral ties objectively and rationally. It also called on the U.S. to stop interfering in China's internal affairs. The comments were made following a series of remarks by the U.S. Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, who has said Beijing poses the greatest challenge to U.S. foreign policy. American and Chinese officials are scheduled to hold a diplomatic meeting next week in Alaska, which will be the first since U.S. President Joe Biden took over the White House. Biden and his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping held their first phone call last month and appeared at odds on most issues, even as Xi warned that confrontation would be a disaster for both nations.
Tensions heat up between the United States and China again over the same old issues, which have always been a source of animosities between the world's two top economies. It was widely believed that the new U.S. administration would make changes to its foreign policy, but it seems it's still following in the footsteps of its predecessor. Amid their diplomatic row, China has once again urged the United States to stop interfering in Hong Kong's affairs and not to go down the wrong path even further. The Chinese Foreign Ministry said Beijing will resolutely safeguard its sovereign security and development interests. That after the U.S. condemned China over planned reforms to Hong Kong's electoral system, claiming the move is aimed at pushing back democracy in the city. A top Chinese government official has, however, defended the decision, saying the reform coupled with last year's security law would help manage the chaos in the city. Apart from Hong Kong, the world's two economic powers are at odds over other issues, including Taiwan and the South China Sea. Despite repeated warnings, the U.S. Navy on Thursday announced the sailing of a warship through the Taiwan Strait, claiming it was a routine transit of the USS John Finn. It was the third such voyage through waters separating mainland China and Taiwan since President Joe Biden took office. Still, China has called on the U.S. to bring the bilateral relations back on the right track through objective and rational mechanisms. It also called on the U.S. to stop interfering in China's internal affairs. The call followed a series of rhetoric by U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who alleged that China is a challenge to the security and values of Washington and its allies. American and Chinese officials are scheduled to hold a cliffhanger meeting next week in Alaska, which will be the first diplomatic overture since Biden entered the White House. The outcome might improve or worsen the already tense relations between the two.
Well, joining us on this debate, we have political analyst Michael Lane, who's joining us from Washington, D.C. Also, we have West Coast coordinator of the Answer Coalition, Mr. Richard Becker, who's joining us from San Francisco. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Michael Lane. In Washington, Beijing calls the upcoming meeting a high-level strategic dialogue. Washington, on the other hand, says it's nothing of the kind and that there's no intent at this point for a series of follow-on engagements. Are the U.S. and China, in your opinion, playing chess over how to portray the Alaska meeting?
Yes, they are playing chess. Look, in the United States, we call it dancing, world chess, checkers, whatever. The point is, we have a new administration here in the United States. The existing regime in China is testing and probing and trying to get to know the Biden administration to see how they might be different from the Trump administration, to see how their reactions might be different from the Trump administration. This is a little minuet dance they're doing, including all of the relations they have. Not just testing the reaction to warships sailing through the Taiwan Strait, but also what is the future trade relationship, what is the ability of the two sides to engage on non-confrontational issues such as human rights, et cetera. So to portray the stakes and the purpose of the upcoming meeting in Alaska very, very differently not only reflects their positioning vis-a-vis each other, but their positioning on the world stage, so that when they issue a post-meeting press release, they will have set the stage to have their own version of the meeting interpreted appropriately.
Mr. Becker, the White House has acknowledged the meeting could address deep disagreements between the two countries. How far apart are Beijing and Washington, and how much of that damage was inflicted during the Trump administration?
Well, from a historical point of view, the pivot to Asia, which is a very aggressive doctrine and strategy, began under the Obama administration. It didn't go very, it didn't advance very far, it advanced further under Trump. And I think that the intention of the Biden administration, peopled by top officials like Anthony Blinken, and also the military secretary, the Secretary of Defense, as they call him, Lloyd Austin, and others in the administration, that they're pursuing a very aggressive course. You have the outgoing, he's still the commander of the Indo-Pacific Command, Admiral Philip Davidson, who's making very belligerent statements and calling on Congress to appropriate $27.3 billion more for armaments to build up the U.S. Bases and munitions along what he calls the first island chain. This is just in the last week and a half. The first island chain meaning Japan, Okinawa, Taiwan, Northern Philippines, Borneo, possibly Vietnam as well. So they will be quote-unquote survivable. Their weaponry will be survivable in the event of a U.S. war with China. Not that the people would be necessarily be survivable, but the weapon systems, there would be enough of them to keep them going. This is very cynical and very aggressive on the part of the new administration. And we should not look at it from the point of view of like there's some kind of equal balance. It's not that China is deploying military forces all along in the sea off the United States, the Pacific or the Atlantic. That's not happening. This is a very one-sided military aggressive push that's coming from Washington. And I think it does indicate how weak the relations are at this point, how strained the relations are, that the meeting between Blinken and his foreign minister counterpart from China is taking place not in either capital, but in Alaska.
Michael Lane, the Chinese Premier Li Keqiang said on Thursday that China and the U.S. had common interests in many areas for cooperation, and that Beijing hoped ties could develop in a healthy way based on respecting each other's core interests, calling it a win-win cooperation and non-interference in internal affairs. That doesn't seem to be the approach that Washington is conveying right now towards Beijing. Why is that?
Well, again, the two sides are testing each other to figure out what the limits are, what the reactions are going to be for certain things. Now, I have no doubt that Beijing is quite sincere when it says that it is looking forward to focusing on areas of cooperation, areas of mutual interest. There's no reason why we can't get along. Our differences are not that far apart. Because from their point of view, if the United States sees it's China, sees it all China's way, China gets to advance the ball. There, we already see that happening a little bit in Hong Kong. There's certainly a lot of discussion here in the U.S. About what the future of Taiwan is and what President Biden might do vis-a-vis Taiwan if things were to shake up a little bit. And so the United States, on the other hand, is pretty comfortable with the status quo, where Hong Kong was still 25 or so years left under the joint declaration of the Sino-British proposal. We're very comfortable with Taiwan being in a sort of undefined status, but certainly not under the control of Beijing, of the shipping lanes and sea lanes in the South China Sea and other parts in that area being open to free commerce, free transit of ships in commerce, rather than needing the permission of the Chinese government. So the United States sees our mutual interest differently, and that is status quo, more or less. Whereas China sees the mutual agreements or mutual interests as fairly dramatic change in the way that things are done over there. So everybody wants cooperation. Everybody wants to focus on mutual interests. But when the mutual interests are incongruent, it creates headlines the way we're seeing it today. And I suspect we're going to see headlines about the U.S.-China relationship for at least the next year, if not more so. It depends on how President Biden responds to various Chinese initiatives, because I think President Xi is really thinking this is the time to go ahead and press China's case on all the things that they would like to accomplish.
Richard Becker, Secretary of State Antony Blinken, has said Beijing poses the greatest challenge to U.S. foreign policy and reaffirmed that Washington will work with its allies to hold China accountable for efforts to threaten the stability of the Indo-Pacific, including across the Taiwan Strait. Well, the United States and its allies are the ones sending ships to where they call an international waterway. Who is threatening the stability of the region, in your opinion?
Well, I don't think that there's much question, really, that it is this aggressive military buildup and the call for an even greater military buildup that is the most destabilizing element. And that's coming from Washington. And to talk about increasing the level, the military level of the Indo-Pac command. And I have to remark that, you know, that no other country in the world has commands for all different sections of the globe. And the United States has 11 that cover all of Earth, the cyber command, the outer space command, you know, all these commands. And now to have the leader of the Indo-Pac campaign, command, Admiral Davidson, And that command covers 34 countries with 60% of the world's population. And now to talk about building up survivable weapons systems in Japan and Okinawa and Taiwan and other countries in the region, you know, what is that except a very aggressive destabilizing move on the part of this commander? And he says, he goes even further than Antony Blinken does Admiral Davidson. He says, China is the greatest threat of the century to the entire free world. How we're defining the free world at this point that's been a question for a long time. But to do that, to do what Davidson is doing, to push forward the way that he is, and to have Biden himself, along with his Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, making these very hostile comments in relation to China. And on the other side, regardless of how you evaluate the Chinese government as a whole, the Chinese government, the leader in China is calling for, to pull back from, the leadership there is calling for the United States to pull back from this aggressive behavior. But they're not pulling back from it. They're going forward with it.
Michael Lane, with everything that's going on with regards to the Taiwan Strait, Chinese forces have vowed to respond to any possible threats or provocations. Do you think that the Taiwan Strait right now is possibly the hottest flashpoint between the two countries, and how important is it in the bigger picture?
I don't think that the Taiwan Strait is the hottest flashpoint. Because I don't think either side really wants to risk anything in that area in the immediate future. I think long term, of course, it's probably the most critical issue, but it's not reaching a boiling point in the foreseeable future. I think that the current hot thing is the Chinese government's actions taken earlier this week. To change the Hong Kong voting system, that is something that's immediate. That is something that's front and center. It's very forward, and we had an immediate reaction from the United States State Department, of course, and a counter reaction from the Chinese. Of course, the people of Hong Kong are very concerned about it. But I think in terms of the flashpoint, that is front and center today. Now, having said that, I don't think that the United States is really in a position to do much about what has just gone on. The Biden administration may exercise some options to lay some sanctions against China for taking this course of action. By the way, for our viewers, it's the United States' position that China has abrogated the Sino-British joint declaration concerning the future of Taiwan. And I think China freely admits that they've done that, but they describe that joint declaration as a sort of a historic piece of paper that has no relevance in today's day and age. So the question is back to, now that China has done this, as they implement it, as they fundamentally and unilaterally change the way Hong Kong is governed, starting with the way they conduct their elections, what will the United States, and perhaps in concert with Britain, do about the alleged violation of the joint declaration? And I think that the United States and Britain's hands are essentially tied. I mean, geography seems to be counting for about 98% here, and China and Hong Kong are tied together geographically, and the United States and Britain are forever a world away.
Richard Becker, talking about regional issues, Singapore's prime minister has said that a clash between the U.S. and China is more likely than it was 5 years ago. Do you think that the other Asian maritime claimants to the South and East China Seas, they're relying on U.S. help in the sovereignty dispute?
Well, you know, it is a more dangerous situation, I think. I don't think there's any question about that. And it's also very possible to climb the escalation ladder, as they put it, without either side at the beginning of that, and it's already begun, wanting to have a war. But it can lead to war. And I think it's reckless behavior that's going on the part of the United States right now. I have to say that the United States is not a signatory to the Sino-British agreement on Hong Kong. It's a very, I think it's, we should find it, you know, somewhat amusing, the selectivity that the United States government has in regard to elections in other countries. You know, they're talking now about, well, this is unfair, what's going on in Hong Kong, the change in the system. They criticize Iran's electoral system, but they don't criticize Saudi Arabia's electoral system because there is no electoral system. I mean, you have a number of countries that are allies of the United States that can do whatever, and they won't get any criticism about it. And Saudi Arabia, of course, has never had an election. It's ruled by an absolute monarchy. So I think that we should all take a step back and say, okay, now why are they saying this about this country? And I think that the reality is that what is being said about China today, and the not only the words that are being said, but the aggressive actions that are being taken, come from the national security strategy of the United States, actually, the latest one that was adopted in December of 2017. In the next few months, there'll be a new one. The one in 2017 shifted the main focus of U.S. foreign policy from quote-unquote fighting terrorism to major party competition, as they put it, and clearly aimed at China and Russia, but I think primarily at China. And that is probably going to be, that part of the doctrine is probably going to be strengthened. And China is seen, because of its growing economic power, its military power, I mean, its military budget is a quarter of what the United States military budget is, probably really less when you figure in other elements that aren't counted in the military budget in the U.S. but are really military related to past and present wars. But it's not really the military threat. It's the fact that China's influence in the world is growing, and the U.S. national security strategy really is aimed at the idea, or has as its top objective, the idea that there should be one superpower in the world, and it should be the United States, and no others allowed.
All right. Thanks a lot, gentlemen. Political analyst Michael Lane joining us from Washington, D.C. Also thanks to West Coast Coordinator of the Answer Coalition, Mr. Richard Becker, joining us from San Francisco. Also, a special thanks to you for staying with us on this debate.
insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll be discussing the commentary of the 23rd chapter of the Holy Quran, Suratul Mu'minun, or the Believers. Now let's just listen to the related verses and then we'll be back. So stay with us.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
Qad aflahal mu'minun.
Certainly will the believers have succeeded.
الذين هم في صلاتهم خاشعون.
They who are during their prayer humbly submissive.
والذين هم عن اللغو معرضون.
And they who turn away from ill speech.
Brothers and sisters, we were talking about the first and second verses of this chapter. Chapter Mu'minun, the Faithful. It starts saying, Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, قَدْ أَفْلَحَ الْمُؤْمِنُونَ الَّذِينَ هُمْ فِي صَلَاتِهِمْ خَاشِعُونَ. Successful indeed are the believers, those who are humble in their prayers. We try to clarify on the term أَفْلَحَ and elaborated on the meaning of فَلَاح, which means to prosper. But the point is, who are the successful people according to the verses of the Holy Quran? Let's move on to some verses of the Holy Quran to understand who the successful are. According to the 77th verse of chapter Hajj, the Holy Quran says, يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا إِرْكَعُوا وَاسْجُدُوا وَاعْبُدُوا رَبَّكُمْ وَفْعَلُوا الْخَيْرَ لَعَلَّكُمْ تُفْلِحُونَ. Worship your Lord, do good, that haply you may prosper. So worshippers are among the successful people. Or in chapter A'raf, in the 8th verse, the Holy Quran says, وَالْوَزْنُ يَوْمَئِذٍ الْحَقِّ فَمَنْ ثَقُلَتْ مَوَازِينُهُ فَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الْمُفْلِحُونَ. Whoever's scales are heavy, those are the ones who shall be prosperous. So those whose deeds are valuable and heavy on the scales of hereafter are among the successfuls. Or literally, the ones who are the party of Allah are successful. The Holy Quran says, beware, verily the party of Allah are the successful ones. أَلَا إِنَّ حِزْبَ اللَّهِ هُمُ الْمُفْلِحُونَ. The 22nd verse of chapter Hashr. And you may remember that the Holy Quran says, فَذْكُرُوا اللَّهَ كَثِيرًا لَعَلَّكُمْ تُفْلِحُونَ. Those who remember Allah much shall be from among the prosperous. And remember Allah much, that you may be prosperous.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
One of the other cases that the Holy Quran counts some people as the successful ones is in chapter Ma'idah, in the 100th verse. In this verse we read, فَاتَّقُوا اللَّهَ يَا أُولِي الْأَلْبَابِ لَعَلَّكُمْ تُفْلِحُونَ. So, be awe of Allah, O possessors of intellects, that you may be prosperous. So, the God-fearing are also from among the successful. And in this very chapter, the Holy Quran states some other groups as successful ones, the ones who are warriors of faith, warriors actually for faith. وَجَاهِدُوا فِي سَبِيلِهِ لَعَلَّكُمْ تُفْلِحُونَ. And strive hard in His way, that you may be prosperous. And of course, another instance is in the chapter Nur, where the Holy Quran states, وَتُوبُوا إِلَى اللَّهِ جَمِيعًا أَيُّهَا الْمُؤْمِنُونَ لَعَلَّكُمْ تُفْلِحُونَ. And turn unto Allah altogether, O believers, in order that you may succeed. But having a closer look at all these verses, dear listeners, you may remember one of the most important points we mentioned regarding قَدْ أَفْلَحَ الْمُؤْمِنُونَ in the beginning program. All these cases are mentioned as the ones who are successful, but all of them are using words like la'alla and la'allakum, which means perhaps, so that, or haply you may be. So, only three cases in the Holy Quran, the word falah is mentioned without la'alla or such words, and this means certainty. In this case, the mu'minun, the believers that are khashia in their salat, that are actually humble in their prayers, are certainly from among the successful. But all these cases that we counted, worshippers, the ones who are from the Almighty Allah's party, the God-fearing ones, the penitents, the warriors of faith, all these are mentioned in the verses with the word la'alla. So, we come to this conclusion that one of the most important aspects and causes, actually, of true faith is salat and prayers. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets this life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Round the world with reporters.
Leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has denounced the policies of the United States. In his speech marking the occasion of Eid al-Mab'ath, Ayatollah Khamenei slammed Washington for building military bases in the region under the pretext of fighting terrorism and called for the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq and Syria. Ayatollah Khamenei said Washington is the only country that has used nuclear weapons in action, but it claims to be against weapons of mass destruction. He noted that Washington still has the biggest nuclear arsenal in the world. Iran's leader also accused Washington of turning a blind eye as its Arab allies keep bombarding civilians in Yemen. He pointed out that Washington and even the United Nations, however, raised an outcry as soon as the people of Yemen started defending themselves against the Saudi-led aggressors. Elsewhere in his remarks, Ayatollah Khamenei said the United States is inverting the truth by claiming to support human rights while supporting those who violate them. Washington's double standards were also highlighted in remarks made by Iran's foreign minister. In a tweet, Mohammad Javad Zarif said the new U.S. administration is still sticking to a policy of maximum pressure against Iran, but claims to favor diplomacy. Zarif also denounced Washington's move to block the release of Iranian assets frozen in South Korea. He noted that Iran needs the fund to purchase food and medicine as the country is fighting to contain the spread of the new coronavirus. Iran's foreign minister made the comments after U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken announced Washington's opposition to unfreezing of the Iranian funds by South Korea. Blinken said the money will only be released when Iran returns to full compliance with the 2015 nuclear deal. Tehran, however, says it will only reverse its commitment cuts once Washington removes all its unilateral sanctions against the Islamic Republic. Iranian officials argue it was the U.S. that threw the agreement into crisis by its withdrawal and must therefore be the one who returns to it first. On the surface, it looks like the new administration in the White House has chosen to adopt less hawkish policies and engage more with the world. But in reality, little has changed since Joe Biden took the helm in January. Eyes are now on the Biden administration to see whether Washington will choose to give up its bullying or keep on the same beaten track.
Crude oil is considered one of the backbones of the Indian economy, and recent months have seen a sharp rise in the crude prices. Petrol prices are at an all-time high in the state of Mumbai, while diesel, the main driver of industrial activity, is being sold for more than 88 rupees a liter, raising transportation costs. The government of Prime Minister Narendra Modi for now has shifted the blame for high prices on previous governments and production cuts by some oil exporting nations.
Experts say the rising crude prices will put pressure on the country's economy that's heavily dependent on imports and has just recovered from a deep recession following COVID-19 pandemic, which shattered the world economy.
While many experts believe that the government could cut taxes on petrol and diesel ahead of election in 5 key states, they, however, warn that the persistent higher prices could lead to inflation, which could threaten the path to recovery. They say both state and central government should act swiftly.
Prices are at historic high. Now both the state governments and the central governments, they both will have to jointly come with reduction. Now, state governments have their own issues, and they, despite the fact that all the opposition parties, they are trying to make out a case for reduction, but they are not acting.
While the revenues gained from taxes on retail fuel is key for government to boost spending in the economy that exited a rare recession, the central bank sees those levies along with elevated crude prices a benefit. But experts say any withdrawal of the easy monetary policies to combat price growth will lead to a spike in borrowing costs, in turn hurting consumption and business activity at a time when millions of Indians are still out of work due to pandemic. Experts say the turmoil in West Asia is also a factor driving oil prices, especially for India, which is import-driven economy. Meanwhile, a new report by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development predicts India will be among the large economies most severely hit by the COVID-19 pandemic and the lockdown restrictions to combat it. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
Spring is about to kick in, and nations that celebrate Nowruz are gearing up to ring in the Persian New Year. Gathering in Tehran is attended by representatives from all countries that mark the ancient tradition of Nowruz, including Iran, Afghanistan, and Tajikistan. They're here to exchange views on the history of the long-standing festivity and share their unique customs in celebrating the occasion.
The Nowruz festival in Tajikistan starts with a nationwide ceremony called Golgardani, where children who carry flowers go door to door and share the flowers with different families.
Every year during Nowruz, we take part in the Roses Festival, which is hosted by the city of Mazar-e Sharif, and people from all over the country gather there to celebrate.
During the Roses Festival in Afghanistan, we have a special performance called Molla Mahmad Jan, which is an exciting love story.
Nowruz means new day in Persian, and it marks the first day of spring in the Northern Hemisphere. To Iranians, it translates into a time to refresh the soul from all bad memories and make a fresh start in the year ahead.
In Iran, days ahead of Nowruz, all Iranians do the spring cleaning tradition. But what is more is the fact that not only do we dust up our houses, but we also purify our minds and our souls from any bad experiences. That's why Nowruz is regarded as a festival of peace, when nations come together and celebrate far from any political considerations.
Nowruz is now a recognized tradition in the world. In 2009, the United Nations proclaimed Nowruz an international event at the initiative of 12 countries that share this event, including Iran, Afghanistan, India, and Turkey. Nowruz has been celebrated by Iranians since 3 millennia ago. This year, mass celebrations will largely be limited in the wake of the coronavirus. But that's what Nowruz is all about. Throw away bad thoughts, and let's hope that in the Persian New Year, the virus will leave us alone. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
What once caught in the hundreds of children who remained in the border patrol hands when they were cruelly separated from their parents by the Donald Trump regime, now they are counted by the thousands. The number tripled in just a few weeks. According to the internal CBP report, there are more than 3,400 unaccompanied migrant children in cages.
It might be a big problem in the immediate future, like meaning in this couple of months ahead of us. But it's certainly not the main headache as it relates to immigration, because as we know, the problem is much more complex, and it's a problem that he inherited, not from the precisely from the Trump administration, but from years of a broken system that has not been fixed.
What is happening on the United States border was ignored for several days by President Biden's administration, even publicly refusing to accept that they are facing a humanitarian crisis. Still, according to witnesses, this is how they address the issue internally.
It is a humanitarian crisis because every time we deal with groups that migrate and you are not able to accommodate them, the numbers, the volume, it becomes a humanitarian crisis by definition of what a crisis is. However, if we hear carefully, the Biden administration is not labeling a crisis. The word crisis is coming from the conservative, the Republican Party, because the more you label it a crisis, it will give more ammunition from the right to say, you can't solve it.
Aside from being detention cages that is not designed for children, a report indicates that they are sleeping on benches as there are no beds. According to government data, 9,000 migrant children crossed the border in February, but now thousands more are waiting on the Mexican side. Reporting from Miami, Ronnie Carvello.
The sixth conference of American human rights was held near the Turkish city of Istanbul to discuss the violations of human rights by the United States and the region. The participants stressed that preserving unity among Islamic world is a must in standing against the U.S. and its Western allies' policies, which have only brought death and war to the region.
In this conference, we have tried to discuss the human rights from the point of view of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, as well as the scholars of other countries, including Turkey.
The participants also expressed concerns over the crimes being committed by the U.S. and its Western allies in Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan, saying the U.S. must be held accountable for the human rights violations.
The conference seeks to introduce the crimes committed by the United States to the international community and the young generation.
The speaker said Iran and Turkey must stand together to stop the U.S. interventions in the region.
The U.S. boasts about defending human rights, but it is the main violator of the rights in the world, particularly in our region. We are here today to show the real face of the U.S. as the main country behind genocides underway in the region.
Unity is the key to preserve Muslim nation against foreign interferences. This has been the main theme of the conference this year. The Iranian and Turkish scholars called for vigilance among regional states to stop the U.S. violence and put an end to its plots in the region. Rahshan Saglam, SN Yurt.
The EU Parliament vote to strip Catalonia MEPs of their immunity came as no surprise to politicians in Barcelona and Madrid. The vote, cast Monday and held secret until Tuesday morning, was backed by 400 European lawmakers. 248 voted against it and 45 abstained. The decision was welcome news for Spain, which is seeking the extradition of the former president of Catalonia and his aides for sedition and misuse of public funds.
The decision sends out three messages. First, an MEP cannot use their status to avoid appearing before court for possible breaches of national law. Second, this is evidence of the solidity of the rule of law in Spain and the respect for the Spanish justice system. And third, the problems in Catalonia must be resolved within Spain, not in Europe.
Catalonia's pro-independence civil society groups believe the decision is a major setback for European democratic institutions.
They should think more about what they are doing by covering the interests of the Spanish state, because they are undermining the ability of the European Union to lecture others in the world on fundamental rights.
The European Parliament argues the prosecution of Puigdemont and aides predates their entry to the Eurochamber, an argument that hardly resonates among the separatists, who point to the increasing support for their case among EU lawmakers.
The number of MEPs that feel uncomfortable with the current course of events with the Spanish government has almost tripled, and this is huge and speaks tons, he speaks thousands of, on one hand, how the Spanish government is handling the situation, on how the European Commission is not handling the situation.
The European vote revealed deep divisions within the coalition government in Madrid after junior partner Podemos decided to vote against lifting the immunity for Puigdemont, Comín and Ponsatí. Puigdemont's lieutenant in Catalonia Monday noted that the strategy of the separatists to take the conflict to the world stage is beginning to bear fruit.
The internationalization of the repression of Catalan elected officials by the Spanish state is more relevant than ever before in the heart of Europe. We will see what precedent this case sets in EU courts and parliament.
As Spain mulls issuing new arrest warrants for the three Catalan MEPs, their defense team have vowed to take the case to the European justice.
All eyes are now on the European Court of Justice, where the next legal battle will play out, much to the discomfort of EU member states, which seem increasingly embroiled in the Catalan case for independence. Cusay Kedrip, Barcelona.
Thousands of cancer patients in Yemen are in dire need of help. Yemen's National Center for Blood Transfusion and Research says the blood stocks and components of concentrated red cells, fresh frozen plasma and the platelets cannot be reserved anymore due to the lack of fuel.
We have entered the dangerous stage of the collapse of health centers across the country. Our branches in Hodeida and LBB have stopped their operations and the rest of the branches are about to stop. There is no justification for this blockade. The interruptions in the import of fuel mean the death of patients with kidney failure and chronic diseases.
The center provides services to hundreds of kidney failure patients and cancer patients, including children with leukemia, who depend on the center to obtain the necessary substances to survive.
This center provides more than 60% of its services to people with chronic diseases such as cancer, kidney failure, and wounded people. The fuel crisis is making an already bad situation worse amid the war and siege. Patients with kidney failure and leukemia need regular checks and doses of medicines, and stopping these services leads to the death of patients.
Yemenis are suffering from fuel shortage due to the continued detention of 14 petrol ships by the Saudi-led coalition. The fuel crisis is threatening the closure of over 1,500 health facilities around the country.
International aid organizations and watchdogs have warned that the lives of millions of people in Yemen are in danger due to the all-out blockade imposed on the country by Saudi Arabia and its allies. The international community has so far failed to take action and stop Riyadh from committing war crimes. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Iran and the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden remain in a standoff over the revival of the 2015 nuclear deal, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA. The U.S. says Iran must take the first step and return to full compliance with the deal, but Tehran says Washington must do so because former President Donald Trump unilaterally walked away from the accord in May 2018 and reimpose sanctions.
Since the U.S. backed out of the deal, it should take the first step. The one that broke the deal must return to it sooner and knows that Iran is ready to fulfill its commitments.
Iran, which began scaling down its JCPOA commitments 1 year after Washington's withdrawal, says its measures are in line with two paragraphs of the accord and in response to the failure of the remaining signatories to fulfill their obligations. On Wednesday, top Iranian security sources ruled out a step-by-step return to the deal, reiterating that Tehran will hold talks with the U.S. only if it lifts its unilateral sanctions. Speaking to Press TV, they also stressed that Iran will fully resume its JCPOA obligations only after the U.S. removes its sanctions. Such a stance was the theme of the remarks made by Iran's leader during a speech last month. Ayatollah Khamenei also said during his February speech that Iran will never bow down to U.S. pressure over its nuclear program, and could enrich uranium up to 60% purity if the country needed it. He, however, reiterated that the Islamic Republic will never seek nukes. Now, as Iranian officials say the ball is in the US court on whether it wants to continue the so-called maximum pressure campaign launched by the former administration or reverse the course. This also, as Secretary of State Antony Blinken has already described the Trump-era anti-Iran campaign as a failed policy.
The coronavirus pandemic in Iran is now past its third peak, but a new wave of the virus is feared to be gripping the country, with some southern areas witnessing a surge in infections and fatalities. That has left hospitals, especially in the southwestern province of Khuzestan, short of beds. Now, to make up for the bed shortage in the worst affected areas, the headquarters for the execution of Imam Khomeini's order, which is an entity affiliated with the leader of the Islamic Revolution, has launched mobile hospital, which is fully equipped and ready to be deployed to the target zones.
The mobile hospital has all the necessary equipment to serve as a super specialty hospital in the less privileged areas in the hardest hit zones during the pandemic. The 500-bed hospital is connected to a telemedicine network and can use the facilities of other hospitals if necessary.
The headquarters for the execution of Imam Khomeini's order has been at the forefront of efforts to fight the pandemic in Iran. Its main focus has been on developing a domestic COVID vaccine. The jab, called Coviran, is now at its second human trial stage. Three other Iranian entities are also developing their own vaccines.
We have reached the capability to produce COVID vaccines based on all the platforms that are existing today, such as mRNA, vector, attenuated virus, recombinant proteins, etc. We are facing the US sanctions that prevent other countries from selling us their vaccines, so we have had to rely on our own resources. The process is a bit lengthy, but we hope to be able to get a local vaccine to the market in a matter of 5 months.
Nearly 1.7 million people in Iran have so far caught the virus. Over 60,000 of them have succumbed to the disease. As Iranian vaccines are yet to make their way to the market, authorities are importing foreign-made jabs, such as Russia's Sputnik V, to inoculate people. So far, Moscow has dispatched three vaccine consignments, topping 320,000 doses. Iran has also imported another 250,000 vaccine doses from China. Experts say the pandemic is outpacing the vaccination program, and for now, early diagnosis and medication is still the only way to contain the virus. The headquarters for the execution of Imam Khomeini's order says it's also speeding up efforts to get its vaccine to the mass production stage as soon as possible. But it says developing the infrastructure for COVID patients is still a high priority, since the fight against the coronavirus is still far from over. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند این ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illa Allah. Allahu ya Allah wallahu akbar.
Leadership from the perspective of Imam Khomeini. When we say that after the disappearing of the Imam of Time, may Allah hasten his reappearance, the powers which the Prophet and the Imams had are given to the just jurist. Nobody should misunderstand this by thinking that the position of jurist is the same with that of the Imams and the Prophets, because the discourse here is not on positions but on duties and responsibilities. Wilayah or authorities in Islamic government, which means the power of governing and administrating a country and putting the sacred Islamic laws into effect, is a very difficult and important duty.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Today we are with another episode of Spring of Truth from IRB English Radio with the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini. And I'm your host, Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi. According to Imam Khomeini, we were talking about the religion of Islam. And we have one of sayings of Imam Khomeini in which Imam has said that Islam has a thesis and program for this man, who is everything. That is, has stations from the nature to the supernatural and the world of divinity. This was our last saying that we were talking in regards to the religion of Islam. After this, we have another saying in which Imam has said, with such a progressive school as Islam, there is no reason why the Iranian nation should imitate the Western model or that of the communist countries for its own advancement and progress. Basically, Imam Khomeini is making this clear for his nation, being the leader of the nation, being the supreme leader of the Iranian nation after the revolution, and especially the leader who did this revolution on the basis of Quran and on the basis of Islam.
Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum, Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum, Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum, Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum.
He explains that this revolution, because it is an Islamic revolution and it covers the Islamic rulings, this Islam itself is a complete school and it's a progressive school. And there is no need for the Iranian nation to follow the Western models, to follow the footsteps of the Western model or communist countries. Why? Because before the revolution, the system in the Iran, the authorities in the Iran, they were basically following the Western models. They were actually following the communist countries. And this Islamic revolution has overthrown all these systems in the world and introduced a new system. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Years ago, a coalition of civil rights leaders calling themselves the 200 brought a legal suit against the California Air Resources Board, or CARB, the main agency of the California government responsible for implementing climate policies. The lawsuit charged these policies were systematically violating the rights of minority citizens in the state, particularly those living in poverty. They're prepared through an article written by Jonathan Tenenbaum, titled California Horror Scenario Could Sink Biden. The article has been published by the Asia Times Daily. Please stay with us for more of Jonathan Tenenbaum's article. Climate fundamentalists tend to believe in sacrifice and regimentation